Mr. Lewenden, Reel 27. So you returned to the battalion and you went to Frank Duffy?
Well, you see, the thing was I had to. He was the obvious one because, that was my company and I didn't want to go to anywhere else. I didn't want to go to another company. As long as I knew that he was still there and just pick up again from where I left off.
And so that was that you were still a section?
Yeah, I was a corporal then, yeah.
Can you remember who your sergeant was after 6 months?
I can remember. I can remember that because I've explained to you that some of these reinforcements that we'd had at, as I say, places like Leader, had been promoted in my absence, not just me, but other people as well, anybody who'd been missing. And when I got back, and I was a bit surprised to find that some of them had got as high as I had. But I don't think that they ought to have got. I don't mean that at all. What I mean is that they hadn't really been there for any great length of time in order to achieve what they had achieved. But I can understand that to a certain extent, Duffy's hand must have been forced, or somebody's hand must have been forced, in order to make the appointment anyway, because if you had to have these people, and if you didn't have them, you had to invite somebody in to take their place. So that was the reason for that, you see. Well, I understood all that. I didn't hold that against anybody. Not at all. Duffy explained the situation to me. He said as much to me as what I've just said to you, in other words. He said, I expect you, he said, I'll make an example. He said, for instance, there's a bloke called Carter, Sergeant Carter. Now he said, take for instance, Sergeant Carter, he said, of course, he said, has he been, not been away, sick and that sort of thing, he said, I needn't tell you that Sergeant Carter would not now be Sergeant Carter. He might have been something else Carter, but he said he wouldn't have been Sergeant Carter. So he only confirmed to me what I thought, you see. But, he was quite honest about it. Mm. And he said, I'll take it you want to come back to Deacon. I said, of course I do. He said, in that case, he said, we'll carry on where we left off. And he said, I shall do the best I can for you. And that was it.
So you rejoined the battalion, you rejoined D Company. Were there many men from the early days left at this stage in the platoon?
I suppose there were a few, yeah. Oh yes, there wasn't. They weren't by any means not flat, They were, they hadn't done too bad, really. They hadn't done too bad. The trip to Greece, which I knew nothing about, hadn't seemed to have made very much difference in that respect. There were one or two changes as a result of that trip to Greece, but nothing very much.
Mm. So what's the next thing you can remember in Italy? Next incident?
Well, the next thing really was...
It sticks in your mind.
The next thing really was the... as I said, we went back into line for a bit. I don't remember quite where. I don't remember that sort of thing too much, but know, we did what we ought, you know, what we've been doing, and then all of a sudden we got the call. What was it? We got the call to go to the Middle East. Then that was the next big thing. Nobody expected that. Nobody. I mean, we just couldn't. The whole division went. It wasn't just us. The whole division went. Whole of the 46th division went to the Middle East. So what they did there was to, they got us to Ancona. We went down by boat from Ancona down to Naples. And then when we got to Naples, we got on a troop ship, which took us to Egypt. Well, now, that troop ship took us to, I'm going to call this Port Said. Now, some people, I've heard people talk about this place, and they've said Port Said. Now, I'm not going to say what's right and what's wrong, but I'm going to call it Port Said. But it's spelled in the same way as what, you know what I mean. Who's right and who's wrong, I don't know. Well, that's where the troop ship took us to. And that place was almost identical to Bleeder, except that, it was much, much bigger. Much, much bigger. A huge expanse of sand, solid sand, nothing else but tents and marquees and all over the place. Tremendous big area. That was much, much bigger than we'd. We got there, and then all of a sudden, the ads of battalion orders came out. The daily orders came out from the orderly room. And we were told that the battalion had been granted 3 days leave in Cairo. So of course everybody said, oh, cool, good hope. Let's get some money and then go and spend it. So then, that was one day. Then the next day, or within a day or two, all of a sudden, there was a complaint or a statement came from the medical officer. And he said, because of recent previous activities, and before anybody went on leave, there would be a medical inspection throughout the battalion, and I mean everybody, not just the chosen few, but everybody. And it was everybody. And so I had this medical inspection. Well, strangely enough, nobody realised, nobody had said anything about this. You know, think back to what I said about the troop ship from Naples to Port Said. Now that troop ship was a Polish troop ship, and can't remember the name of it, because I've forgotten it, but it was Polish. But the trouble was that things like the hammocks and the blankets, and maybe some of the cabins as well. Oh yeah, most certainly some of the cabins as well. It was lousy. It was body ice. Now, that didn't come to light until we had this medical inspection. So we had several days at Portshead before anything happened. Medical officers took more or less took complete charge. It was medical inspections here, there, and everywhere, all day and every day. He was determined to stamp this thing out. And what the only way to make absolutely sure that it wasn't going to reoccur, the fact is, you see, this big body lice gets into your clothing and whatever you wear, whether it be cottons or khaki or whatever, it gets into your clothing and that's it, and they breed from there. So any clothing that you had was sterilised, the whole thing. The medical officer arranged for shower units to come. You could get a shower whenever you wanted. He was determined to stamp this out, and it took him best part, well, a good part of a week, maybe more than a week, before he eventually was satisfied that everybody was clean. I'm not saying that everybody had them, I had them, but there were some people who didn't. I'm just throwing that in because that's what that sounds like. But anyway, once that had been put to light, we were of course in KD, and so then we had our leave to Cairo. We've got three days leave. 3 days leave.
What happened then?
Well, you can do what you like. We were no distance from Cairo.
So what did you do in Cairo?
Oh, there's no anything. Pictures and brothels and goodness knows what else.
And
there were plenty of places to go to in Cairo. You could buy watches and sell watches you could do loads of things to do.
Was it do people enjoy themselves?
Oh, then? Yeah. I've been used to that.
So you spent all what money?
Well, anyway, that sort of came and went, and it went all too quickly. So of course eventually we were back again at Portshead, and of course we were there every night. But we used to go to Cairo daily. All the transport was going to and backwards and forwards to Cairo like that.
What do you think of the locals, the local people? How did you get on with them?
Well, they weren't too clever in Cairo, but they're funny lot, the Middle East lot. Because you see, that wasn't we went to other countries, we went to Palestine and Syria as well, before we came back to Western Ukraine. So we had a good old trip round in the Middle East.
So what you were at Portside, leaving Cairo, and so you moved. You were in Israel as well.
We then moved on. We then moved on to various, as I say, we were in Egypt. Possibly the next move would have been Palestine.
And what were you doing there?
Well, nothing particular. You would have the company would have a training program of sorts. Nobody was hard. I mean, we deserved a little bit of a rest, and that was really the purpose of the exercise. The main purpose of the exercise was sending the division to the whole division. Was to get fresh equipment for the whole division, and that's not just talking about us, but everyone else as well. We needed some fresh equipment, stuff we could use, and that was the main purpose. But nevertheless, a training program of sorts, because it was nothing too strenuous, and nobody minded too much. We had good weather. We were just in KD, it was pleasant enough.
Did you were you able to go out for kind of leave when you were at Tel Aviv as well, were you?
Oh yeah, well, I mean, we went to all the countries in turn, Palestine and Syria. We went to Syria, Damascus, and then we sort of finished back at Port Said.
And were you up the strength, the battalion? Was
it? Oh yeah, we were near enough right. We weren't that many short, you know. If we needed any more, we got them. But we had a few sent in there. Of course, Thomason, the RSM, was out with his stick, tucked under his left arm, which was a bad sign, and he made the most of that. He had all those acres of flat, hard sand. What more could he ask for? I mean, he was in his element, you see. So it's just a famous breeder, like I said, you see.
Are any other incidents from this period stick in your mind from the middle age?
That was the most, that one about the body lice was, it's most unpleasant, really, but, nobody expected that, but it happened, you know. I can't think of anything plastic other than that. The other thing, there was one interesting thing about that, and that was, I don't know whether or not I've said anything about this before, but I remember in the training days, you know, when we were in Southern Command, and that, from time to time, you used to get a thing sent out via the ordinary room for volunteers for the Palestine Police. Well, now, most of the time, I know something about this because had there been any volunteers, people who wanted to go into the Palestine Police, had there been any, I would have known about it. Because the whole thing would have gone through records. I would have known all about that. If it had happened. We did have several people in the various platoons who must have thought they would like to have a try. And they were given interviews, and most of them were turned down when they'd had the interview. And they would be given interviews by the Palestine Police people. I don't know whether you know it or not, but the Palestine Police you know what the situation is even today, with regard to Egypt and Israel. And King Hussein, over the years, he tried to keep it in. All that with the Palestine Police is rather similar, if you like, to the Royal Ulster Constabulary in Ireland. In a smaller way, but nevertheless it's quite similar. The Palestine Police were employed in all the big cities, Haifa, Jerusalem, Damascus, Tel Aviv, you name them, they were there, somewhere. And they had a simple sort of dress. It was a pea cap, the ordinary pea cap, with a dark, like trousers, this sort of colour, a shirt, similar sort of colour, no gaiters, boots, always a loaded revolver, and in most cases, some sort of baton. A truncheon at the back. That was their dress. And what they did was to maintain the little uprising that happened from time to time, mainly religious stuff, some political, mainly religious, and they were there to keep the peace, and if necessary, to enforce a curfew. And there were a couple of occasions when we were on that Middle East going around the countries. I personally did one stint in Tel Aviv, and I did another stint in Damascus, where we were called upon to reinforce the Palestine police on a given night. The curfew would be enforced. That would be 6 o'clock in the evening till 6 o'clock in the morning. Nobody was on the streets between those hours, except the Palestine police. There were loads of alleyways, buildings, shop doorways, yards, sheds, all sorts of things where people could hide. But you didn't know they were there. But they were there. It was as broad as possible. And I needed two. Michelle Fine needed two. There weren't many. But you just went with the had a Palestine policeman with you. And you just, as much as they walked the streets, you did sort of a two on and four off thing, you know. And you go back again, and then when your time comes on again, out you go again and do another route.
Did anything happen during these two stints?
No, nothing happened to me. Nothing. I know things did happen, but not to me personally.
So you had quite a quiet time?
Oh, yeah. That did happen, though. And the Palestine police, always, if they took anybody, they were always able to lock them up and keep them out of my way. Once they locked them up, they were locked up, and that was it. But that was the only other thing, with regard to that Middle East thing.
Now, during this period, the battalion history talks about Colonel Preston being replaced by Colonel Worrell, going on to another post. Were you aware of that? Was the colonel?
We knew. Of course, you see, they were both commanding officers, weren't they? It's funny how some commanding officers are far more popular than others. As I remember it, Worrell was quite popular, I think. My memory's right. I thought he was quite popular. Seemed to be quite popular. And what was the other one?
Preston.
I think that by and large the main majority would have gone for the Worrell. I don't know why, but not them. He did really any individuals any good at all, you know.
Did they have a different style?
They had a different style, yeah.
What was different?
Well, I mean, some cracked the whip a bit more than others. I mean, some were a bit more stringent with the officers, for instance. I mean, some were, you get some of them who would probably let the officers have an easy ride, perhaps, if you see what I mean. I mean, they could do it, and it was up to them. Although their initial orders came from brigade headquarters and things like that, and division, but I mean, they had a big say, and they could make a lot of difference to some of the lives of those officers.
So, who was the stricter of Preston and Worrell, do you think?
I think the Worrell was the best. He was strict in a very humane sort of way. Preston, I thought was, of course, you see, a great deal depends on who the adjutant is. So the adjutant is the one who feeds all the ammunition through, and things happen. The adjutant knows about it before the commanding officer does. But that's the way it is.
And who is your adjutant at this stage?
Well, I don't know, because that is the job. Now, I can remember the names of some adjutants.
So you'd have lost touch with that when you moved from HQ company to D company. You wouldn't be as close to that.
Well, there'd probably been several changes in that period of time. I mean, they could change those positions once a month if they wanted. It's the same. It's not like you get the intelligence officer, the quartermaster, the signals officer, the mortar officer. You see, once you're in, and unless you make a hash of it and make a real bad mistake, that's it. You've got a job. But the adjutant, you see, it's all administration. That the adjutant is purely administration. He knows when things happen. He knows about it before anybody. And he's the one who not only tells the commanding officer, but I suppose in some cases he would pass on a little bit of information, advice of some sort at the same time. Maybe, you know, if maybe the commanding officer didn't want to take notice of him, he'd tell him so. So you see, you just don't know what goes on there, because that orderly room stuff is all cloak and dagger stuff, you know. I had friends in the orderly room, Ken Cave. I knew Ken Cave well, and I knew Knighton well. I knew Dougie Wakefield well. Dougie Wakefield was a different kettle of fish. Ken Cave was a wise old bird. He's dead now.
In what way was Dougie Wakefield different? Mm-hmm. In what way was Dougie Wakefield different?
Well, Dougie Wakefield was, he was the youngest of the bunch. And in some ways, he had a different sort of attitude than what Ken Cave had. Ken Cave was more of he had a more adult sort of, he had tackled everything in a more adult way. Dougie Wakefield I'm not actually sure, but I've got my, I believe that probably Dougie Wakefield was one of the intake at Morton Hall. I wouldn't be at all surprised. And he was drafted into the orderly room as an extra clerk. As time went along, that's only a guess, but I don't think I'm far wrong. But Ken Cave was different because he was older, more adult, and he was more the type.
So you travelled quite extensively in the Middle East during this period.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, then all things come from good things come to an end. Then we eventually found our way back again on a troop trip down to back to Italy again.
And what did you think about having to go back to Italy?
Well, we didn't mind all that much because we'd had a fairly good deal. We hadn't had a bad time, a hard time in the Middle East. And we didn't mind that much because really we knew that. I mean, the time was knocking on. We knew that, that we could see a light at the end of the tunnel. Then, even then, although we weren't, talking about River Po days, we weren't anywhere near the River Po. But I mean, we could still see a light. We knew we were on the way. You know.